used to love tequila. I was like, oh, yes, a shot of tequila. Fantastic. Now I smell it, and it's almost like I'm smelling vodka.
See, vodka, I only have an issue with vodka because vodka doesn't taste like anything. So it just feels like you're drinking water.
It tastes like rubbing alcohol is what it tastes like.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That says a lot about me. And
you're, oh, it's just like tasting, I'm drinking water. Yeah, water. Okay.
I mean, 'tis the season.
What water are you drinking? Jesus did not turn water into tequila last time I checked.
It's the same
thing. Or vodka.
It's literally the same thing. Wine, vodka, spirits, it's all the same thing. Mm-hmm. Hey, y'all. Welcome to The Table Is Ours, the podcast where we sit down with our iconic Black stars to talk all things Black. That's Black joy, Black resilience, and Black praise. I'm here with my fabulous co-host, Curvy Dixon. And if curvy were a Christmas holiday activity, she'd be caroling. That was so easy.
Caroling?
You never like when I say curvy.
I literally, my voice went like, Drake.
You would be caroling. You sing all the time. You don't sing, Curvy? Don't make me pull up receipts.
Amira, caroling?
Yeah. What? You know I hate the holidays. I was trying. She never likes what I say.
No, that's not true.
No, it's 100% true. You're always like, okay.
I would be caroling? Huh, I gotta think about this. I think I gotta sit and unpack this for a second.
You sing all the time. But I don't, okay. How's that a far-fetch?
Because carolers are out in the cold all evening, pristine like this.
I don't see caroling like stuck up. Like you can design caroling into whatever you want. The act of caroling is singing.
Perception is reality, and if you perceive me to be a caroler, guess what, sis? I'm going to be the best caroler you've ever seen. No worries.
I knew she wasn't going to like it. I knew.
I embrace it. I will be the soprano, okay? Because okay. My voice is high. And y'all know who that is. That is my radiant co-host,
Amira
Wally. And if Amira were a holiday activity, mm-hmm. she would be a vision boarding party.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite thing to do.
Like, bring the magazines. Actually, I think we would get more drinking done than vision boarding. Mm-hmm. However, the intention would be there. And we would be looking forward to the next year we have ahead.
Yeah, that's what I think you would be. Agreed. I love vision boarding. Like, that's what I'm excited.
Vision boarding is so fun.
For the break, because I just need a beat to sit in everything that's happened in this last year. Celebrate, but then also, like, plot. I love plotting world domination.
It's funny because I think this past year was the first time that I really took it seriously. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've manifested almost everything that I put on that vision board.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. When I was in Harlem, I used to make the vision board. I have a girlfriend that kind of started doing parties, and I would put it on my wall, and I would look at it every day. Mm-hmm. But 2020 was a mess. We all know that.
Yeah.
But this past year, I did it with a small group of friends, and we did a virtual vision boarding party where everyone can kind of contribute online. Mm-hmm. And when I think about it, I'm like, yeah, there's only one thing that I didn't accomplish this year that I set out to accomplish, but mm-hmm. we'll move that to next year.
I support. I actually, for the first year in many, did not vision board last year because 2020 was so bad for all of us. And I think I was in so much pain physically, and I was, mm-hmm. at the end of 2020, I was finally, like, emotionally healed from, like, horrible trying to get my brain right, trying to see the mm-hmm. world again, trying not to lie to tell everyone I was okay. So then when 2021 happened, the year starts with my birthday, because I'm a Capricorn queen.
Hey!
And I was like, you know what? I want to work as hard as I can, but I don't know where my limit is, and I just want to push myself as far as I can. So I wrote down personal goals of how I want to move in life. Like, I wanted my friendships to be better. And I literally just wrote, I want to work really, really hard. And I think I did. Maybe I shouldn't write that on my board anymore.
Yeah.
But I think I need to take time to kind of plot out exactly what's next.
Oh, my God. We should vision board together.
We should with some wine, girl.
Wine, good food, mm-hmm. a charcuterie board, okay?
I love those boards.
A little hot toddy, perhaps.
I love a hot. I think I like the name hot toddy better than I like the drink. But I think like
I actually agree with you. I totally agree.
It's a cute name. It's a Cute name.
Yeah, it rolls off the tongue. I agree with you.
Kirby, my spirited queen.
Ma'am.
What is your favorite part of the holidays?
Ooh, my favorite part of the holidays is going to sound so lofty of me, but it's just the energy. The energy that comes with the winter holiday season. I love seeing all the houses decorated, the lights. I like the idea of us getting to, like, rest and reset and just do the things that we want to do. So I love the period of time where you're, like, connecting with old friends and family and house hopping. That whole, like, September, October, November, December period of holidays for me is, like, chef's kiss pristine. So yeah, I think it's the energy and the of the holidays that I love the most. What about you? What do you love about the holiday season?
Well, one, I love it's near my birthday season.
Hello.
But I love that it's near my birthday season. Also, I like the start of something new. Once it's the holidays, you know that whatever hardships that you went through that year, it's over. Start new, start fresh, bring it into a new vibe. I believe in starting fresh, whether it's January 1st or December 3rd or whatever day is your new beginning, that is the day. I just love the season.
I agree with that. Speaking of holidays, good music, and Christmas activities.
Let them know, let them know.
We had a real life living legend on the show this week, Amira.
I know, girl.
Make me put my hands, make me wanna dance. Say, stop. Kirk Franklin pulled up a seat to the table this week.
Yes, he did. Let me tell y'all, a legend.
Oh my gosh. You know what's crazy about Kirk that I didn't realize? You see it on television, but I didn't know he was so funny
and so nice.
Yeah,
so like, well, of course I thought he was nice, but so funny, so personable, like
very complimentary too.
Yes, he said my skin was nice. That
he did.
I still think about that. So nice,
girl. Put that on your vision board for 2022. Like, yes.
Kirk Franklin is a 16-time Grammy winning gospel singer songwriter and choir director. He is best known for leading contemporary gospel choirs such as The Family, God's Property, and One Nation Crew. He's been dubbed the reigning king of urban gospel. He is the composer and inspiration of the new Lifetime holiday film, Kirk Franklin's A Gospel Christmas. Now, if you missed the premiere, don't worry. You can catch reruns airing on Christmas Day.
So we spoke with the legendary Mr. Kirk Franklin about his early entry into popular music and his multifaceted connection to spirituality and to the big man upstairs, G.O.D. He opens up about his journey growing up adopted and his constant exploration of self and how music was the gift that kept him going. Plus, Kirk gets biblical as he shares an academic look into the whitewashing of religion and its effect, particularly on the Black community. GP, are you with me? Kirk Franklin, let's get into it.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. We are very excited for this.
Like, yeah, I don't even know if that's the right word.
Ecstatic.
Ecstatic.
Ecstatic is the word.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, y'all are looking beautiful too, man. This is an honor. Such an honor.
Thank you.
So we had a really, really good chat with the cast and EP of your new film, Ms. Angela Burchett, Tracy Twinkie Bird, and Regina Bell. And they even sang for us. The standard is high.
They're the ones that like brought in the good energy. Yeah. Like gave us that energy.
That's super dope. That's great.
It is a beautiful film.
It is so good.
So well done. It is amazing. So good. But we do like to start the podcast the same way every single week, and that is by asking this question to all of our guests. And our question for you is, what is something that has brought you joy this week?
Something that has brought me joy this week is, I think it is the continuous level of sacrificial support that my beautiful bride gives me when the schedule just gets a little overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I, I I adore this woman. I cherish her and worship the ground that her feet walks on, because she's such a powerful presence in my life. And so I'm extremely grateful for her.
Mm-hmm. You better speak on that, Kirk. Oh my God. Yeah. Black love, the power of partnership, all of that. So we're going to get right into your life. Your work has always had such a strong sense of hope and aspiration in it. And it's honestly been a real source of joy for us, but I do imagine it's hard to keep up. So my question for you is, how do you find ways to stay so positive?
I think if I can be very candid, there was already so much trauma being an adopted kid that I was experiencing living in that space, is that I think that the world that I lived in overshadowed any moments of any like glimmers of hope, because like I say to people all the time, when I was a kid, dreaming was a luxury that I couldn't afford.
Ooh.
You know, it's because I think that you really become in survival mode. You know, you are raised in these socioeconomic disparities, and being adopted, you had these abandonment issues that are very deep for a myriad of reasons. And then also the lady that adopted me was not a lady. She was an older woman. She adopted me when I was 4. She was 64. And she was a woman from a generation that didn't believe in giving praise. So there was not a lot of reaffirming praise, you know, like it's all of the negative. So everything is packaged in the negative. So you don't really see the good in it. You don't really see good in much. It's because all the affirmation is in the negative. That really didn't impact my life like that.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because I feel like the suppression of joy and gratefulness and love given to Black boys specifically is so few and far between. So I'm wondering, kind of like a little bit of a side question, but at what moment did you kind of come out of that suppressive mentality and were able to put all of the negativity that you received and all the negativity that you were going through in your life to become this positive powerhouse?
I am still a work in progress.
Aren't we all?
And I think that that's what's so amazing to me, even about this gift of songwriting that God has loaned me, is because the songs often speak what I desire to be, not always where I am. It's not always where I am. It's not like a song like Imagine Me. I'm not sitting on the other side of it on the beach sipping Mai Tais. I am projecting what it would be or what it could be, you know, even the fast songs, all the bops, you know, that y'all call, you know, that you young whippersnappers call the bops. It's, you know, that's what, these are aspirations. These are not really positions. And so I'm still in that journey. You know, I am a Black man who's proud to say it even today that I'm still very committed to therapy.
Yeah.
I still go to therapy.
Ooh, gotta love therapy.
We love therapy on this podcast. Love it. Mm-hmm.
So do I.
It's so much work, but the growth is worth it. Yeah. You just said something. You said that dreaming is a privilege, and it is. I don't think people speak to that enough. Like, as we're in 2021, speaking to all the nuances of what privilege is, I don't think a lot of people see that being able to dream what you want to be in 10 years, what you want to, if an astronaut, a teacher, that's a privilege that not everyone gets.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so heavy.
I totally agree. And I think that within our Western culture, that we forget that when you travel to other parts of the world and you still see the authoritarian narratives that continue to keep people impoverished, and you see rules of government that are very oppressive, and you at times can forget that even the freedom to disagree is a privilege.
Even the freedom to have a conversation and discussion about really complicated topics.
We haven't gotten it right, and hopefully your generation and generation after you will get it right, where everyone will have a seat at the table and everybody's voice will be heard. But I have to fight for the Muslim's right to have his voice heard in his religion, because I want him to fight to have my voice heard. And so that's what makes democracy work. That's what makes America work. When I fight for the voice that I don't even agree with, because I want him to fight for mine as well.
Yep.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful way to put it.
Yeah.
I think one of the topics that transcends, right, these like discussions, these narratives, is music. And you have been such a critical and crucial voice in the music industry, period. It's not just gospel music. It's not Christian music.
Period. Period.
Period. Okay. Period. Exclamation point with a T at the end.
I had to do it. I just had to do it one good time.
We welcome it.
But what was that moment in your life when you realized, you know what? I have a voice in music ministry and I want to make that my career path.
Oh man, you're asking questions that I don't always process myself. I think that you can be in it so much that you don't have a chance to write the synopsis of it.
Yeah.
It's that you're just living it moment by moment, day by day. And it's, I think that my deficiencies have always led my narrative. So it's, I don't look, you know, even, you know, the whole, even me joking about same period was not because I was co-signing what you said. I just wanted to seize the opportunity to do the little hand move.
You could have also co-signed. I'll take both.
You know, it is as much of a question for me as you ask me personally. You know, like when you ask the questions, I want to go, yeah, that's a good question. What is that? I don't know, you know, and yeah. I'm hoping, and it's like I'm hoping some strange person can come in and help us answer the question because I don't know. And, but I'm okay not knowing. I feel very safe and not knowing. I think that there are some areas, especially for artists, that self-awareness is, I had a mentor tell me almost 20 years ago that one of the biggest dangers about what we do is that we can learn how to do it. And I think that learning how to do it can take away this impulsive, honest, in the moment, natural expression of creativity and faith or love or compassion, that it's almost like a husband leaving a list for his wife of what they're going to do that evening for intimacy.
Yeah.
At 5 o'clock, I'm going to come on and kiss you. At 6:15, I'm going to put my arm around you. 7 o'clock, you know, and it's like the wife is probably going to be like, oh, this is going to be great. You know?
So romantic.
Yeah. It's like, oh, but the spontaneity of love, none of us can explain it, right? There is no science to the spontaneity of what our species have that we've been genius at doing for millennia, right? And so as I think that creativity must have that space as well as the relationship that one has with its creator. For me as a Christian, I mean, I'm unapologetic of what that is for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that authenticity sometimes is even hard for the person in it to describe.
That's so interesting. It's like, it's so innate that you can't even articulate it, which kind of brings me to my next question. We're wondering, when you started your career, was it intentional to kind of merge the secular, non-secular world? Was it intentional to merge gospel with hip hop? Because we see you do it, so it's refreshing and it's still true to your gospel roots. So was that intentional? Is that something that you think about when you come up with new music?
Girl.
Kirk's like, dang, I needed these questions ahead of time.
No, they're good. They're good questions. Yeah, you know, I just think that it was a divine intersection. I think that I was raised enjoying what I enjoyed. I enjoyed the birth of hip hop as much as anyone else enjoyed the birth of hip hop. And I was engrafted to the culture. I had everything and was connected to everything that was part of that movement in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
While at the same time on Sundays, I was playing at church. I was playing at church and on Sunday nights going to the skating rink. So, you know, it was very much engrafted into the DNA of who I was. I loved popular music. I could get girls because I could sit at the piano and play all the pop songs, you know,
like
the girls like, oh girl, he can play Michael Jackson. Did you hear him play Michael Jackson? Oh, he's so cute, you know? And so, you know, that was something that was very natural for me. So at age 15, when a friend of mine got shot and killed, and I made a very intentional decision to trust Christ with my heart and to really start the journey, the up, down, ugly, disfigured journey of a faith, you know, because I think it's very important to say that, because I think that the people that don't subscribe to faith can look at those of us that do, and it looks very whitewashed. It looks very polished, but it's a very up, down, bipolar, in and out. I love you, God. I don't like you, God. I can't stand you, God. God, why? You know, type of journey.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very real, real part of who we are becoming, right? And so that journey started. And so when God started loaning me music, it was very much from the construct of just the lexicon of my experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You kind of segued perfectly into...
Did you hear me use my big words?
You did.
Me use my big words? I said lexicon.
You did.
Did you hear me use a big...
We heard you.
That's an SAT word.
I was like, oh, where are my SAT cards? Yes. Where are my cheat notes?
Over here Googling.
Googling. I was like, can you see me Google?
That is so cute.
Don't move, because when we return, Kirk shares how he navigates his faith, knowing the troubled history it holds in the Black community.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When Amir and I were prepping for this conversation, we had so many topics that we wanted to discuss with you. And I think that speaks a lot to the character and the multiple worlds that you're able to navigate. But you literally just spoke about kind of the division within faith and the challenge and the whitewashing of Christianity. So taking you into faith and religion, we kind of want to know, how did you find peace on your faith journey, knowing about the white history of Christianity and the effect of it on the Black community specifically? Like, how do you come to terms with those two things?
Yeah, you are now entering doors that I'm very comfortable and excited and passionate to talk about, is because I think that in order for the image of truth to be reimagined, it must also be shared its deficiencies and mistakes along the way. As I think that people, that we heal as we reveal. And yeah. I think that the sins of Western Christianity and the teachings of Jesus Christ are not necessarily synonymous. And so to be able to do that, we also have to be able to give historical context. I think that the biggest problem has been is that the church has not been willing to have the uncomfortable conversations. Mm. And so everything has been whitewashed and has been painted into a Disney movie. Yep. And then people feel manipulated and deceived by that.
But Kirk, the irony in supposed to be allowed to go into a space where you can talk about anything.
Isn't that the irony? Especially when the architects of faith, those that we quote, like, you know, we will reference Moses, we will reference David, we will reference all of these individuals that are in the pantheon of faith, right? These were all broken, jacked up people. They were adulterers. They were murderers. Moses was a murderer. David was an adulterer. He was a bad father. You have all of these people in the canon of scripture that are people that are flawed and jacked up and crazy, but we paint these pretty pictures that people say, if that's what it is, I can't sign up for that because that's not real.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so people will respect you saying, I don't know, instead of you saying something that is manipulative and deceitful for your demigods, per se. And so for me, when my faith started to be questioned in my early 30s, and I started to be a communist because, as you said earlier, which you articulated very well, for whatever reason, God would allow my music to enter into certain communities that were not church communities. Yeah. And in those communities, my faith would start to become challenged. I would have questions asked of me that I was not prepared. And they were more intellectual conversations. They were more historical conversations. And I felt so underprepared that I never wanted to feel that way again. And so it started me on a journey where scholarship and my faith became more important to me. And I really started to apply the discipline of, like, biblical and historical scholarship and history to my faith. I started to audit classes from different seminaries and from different professors. I would pay professors to meet me at Starbucks and to teach me different mm-hmm. things. And I started surrounding myself with men and women of higher scholarship. And so I wanted to be able to get what I was not getting from the pulpit, per se. But then I started to align myself with even people of faith that subscribed to a more academic approach to biblical history and to Christology. And in doing that, the things that I was afraid of became even clear for me about the true history of Christianity was not Europe influencing Africa, but it was actually Africa influencing Europe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That 2 centuries before Constantine made Christianity a national religion, there were Christians, and there were Christians in the sub-Saharan parts of North Africa. The ancient city of Alexandria was the first city that the disciple Mark started a church in. He started a church in Alexandria in North Africa. And so you see all of this African influence. You see Constantine, you see Augustine, you see Tertullian. These were all men of color. These were Black men that were the foundations of the early church, the early Christian church. And so centuries before the transatlantic slave trade, centuries before colonialism, there were free Africans that were studying and subscribing to Christian faith, to the point that when the transatlantic slave trade happened, that there were priests that were writing back to some of the slave owners saying, hey, some of these guys that you've taken, they were free priests. They were priests in the church here in North Africa, and they're not slaves. And so it is a very interesting understanding to understand that there is an academic truth to the faith that we subscribe to that gives it gravitas, right? That allows it to stand in academic and historical circles, that it's not just wishful thinking, and it's just not just imagined choices and decisions, but we are subscribing to something that has very much a substantial truth to who we are and to what we believe, especially people of color, when Christianity was weaponized against us.
Exactly.
And I think that's your last point is what I think so many young Black people are struggling with when it comes to religion. And I think for me, well, I think I refreshed it in this last year. 2020 happened. We all know what happened.
Yeah, buddy.
And we all know how the world reacted to what they're finally calling social change.
Yeah.
And then we go back and we look at every social movement or civil movement that has happened. The home base is kind of like Black religion. It's Black churches, it's Black mosques, it's Black masjid. They were fundraising. They were the ones picketing. Like it started there. So so much of a religion that we recently adapt to is rooted in fighting for more of our rights. I think for me, that's where I kind of came at home with it. I was like, this is what the revolution is. And it's locked deep in our religion.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I agree with you, sister, with the beautiful skin.
Yeah.
That we have to understand that God is not only a God of love, he's a God of justice. And they must coexist at the same time. That you cannot have love without justice. And justice must be the prerequisite of love.
Yeah. This beautiful journey that you took in your 30s, that you challenged what your church was teaching you. Did you take your kids on that too? How was that for them?
Oh, it was very beautiful. And mind you, it wasn't necessarily my church, because the church that I attend, it aligns itself with a more academic approach to biblical truth. It was something that I just started to want to prepare them for, because as I began to see, oh man, this really matters. This is really substantial and it's fundamental in a bigger arcing story, right? There's there's an overarching story of faith for us as people of color and for all people, just because God loves all people. And so it's not exclusively ours, but it has been beautifully orchestrated and translated by Black and brown people, right?
Yeah.
And so as we began to take that journey, is that I think that it just found there was more viability and legitimacy that they started to see their faith in, that there's a legitimate, while at the same time giving them the freedom to do their own journeys, because all past the issues of academia and any area that we can all pontificate, it still is an issue of the heart. That you cannot force anyone's heart to fall in love with a divine call, right? And so that's why I try very hard as a dad to model what being a seeker of Jesus Christ looks like. I try to model it and how I treat their mama and how I treat them and how I treat others, is because people want to see the gospel before they hear the gospel. It's because people are burnt out. They've seen so many clowns. They've seen the circus. They've been to the show. You know what I mean? They've got the ticket. They got the popcorn. They know what it is. They know all of the prosperity ideals, and they've seen their grandmama spend money on a church building project that never got built. What I'm saying? Think about it. They've seen the hood churches where the crack house is right down the street. And it's like, how you gonna have this crack house surviving when this church is right here. Where's the power?
And the pastor driving in a BMW, Mercedes Benz.
Come on.
And,
yeah. Come on. So, yeah.
Yeah.
We've all been there. We've all had the popcorn, right? We all had the ticket. And so now it's very important for us to bring legitimacy to the message while also holding accountable the messenger.
Yeah. Kirk, is there a scripture that you kind of fall back on or reference often when people are questioning this legitimacy or questioning humanity and what the hell is happening in this world and being like, God, where are you? Like, is there a scripture that you reference that really makes you feel better and like kind of like, no, God got it. We're good.
Yeah, yeah, beautiful. It's, I think more than anything, first of all, great question. Y'all are killing the game today. I think more than anything else, that God is not one to be studied. He's one to know.
Yeah.
And so as we begin to know him and begin to even invite him, it's like, okay, this is an old book. This is a book of antiquity. It's a book of poetry, history, literature, right? Right, right. Mm-hmm. Apocryphy, revelations, old prophets, new prophets, dispensationalism. You know, we've got all of these things, old earth, new earth creationism. Okay. In the midst of all of that, I'm from the hood. I just got out of jail. I just came out the trap. You know what I'm saying? and I want to know you. Holler at your boy. And so I believe at that simple space, that's where the journey begins. And so whether it's a Psalms, whether it's a proverb, whether it's just a verse a day, I think that as people begin to have an open heart to want to know God, God will reveal what those words are, what those scriptures are, what those moments are. For me, the overall verse that I always go back to for me is Romans 8:28. All things are working together for the good of them that love the Lord. Everything good, everything bad, everything ugly, God is putting it in the pot, stirring it together, and it's going to be for my good. I use the illustration all the time. If you take an egg and break it open by itself and eat just the yolks, it's going to be nasty. You take some flour in your hand and put it in your mouth, it's going to be nasty. You take a stick of butter and just bite it off, it's going to be nasty. But everything I named to you, those are ingredients for cake.
Yeah. Yeah.
So individually, they taste bad, but when they are working together, look at your neighbor and tell your neighbor, working together. No, I'm playing.
Neighbor, working together. I could literally talk about this for another 2 hours, but we did want to give you an opportunity to talk about your new film out on Lifetime called Kirk Franklin's A Gospel Christmas. Can you talk to us about it?
Yeah, man, thank you. I mean, this is an incredible opportunity for me, incredible opportunity for the genre. And I think that my goal has always been to find opportunities to showcase how this style of music can coexist in any space is because it's also part of Americana, right? That is not just songs of faith and healing, but American music was birthed out of gospel and blues and soul. And so I'm very excited and very thankful for a Lifetime giving a film like this and myself an opportunity to just speak to all communities. And I think it just shows their commitment to diversity and inclusion.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And not only just for Black and brown women in front of the camera, behind the camera, and then even for different styles of Black music. And so I really commend them and really applaud them being faith in action. So thank you, Lifetime, for really being boots on the ground for the change that society really needs.
That's beautiful. And Kirk, we do want to let you know really quickly that we had the honor and privilege of speaking with Angela and Regina, and they gave you your flowers. Man, did they give you your flowers and said how
the way in which
your mind worked
genius
allows them to bring their full selves to work when they sing musically and then some. So just letting you know that little tidbit of information, because they spoke really, really highly of you, as do we.
Yeah.
But we could go on and on and on with you. Please come back. We have so much more to chat with you about. You. But we end our podcast every time with an iteration of this question. And for you, we have, my Black is uplifting because.
My Black is uplifting is because it not only reminds you of where you've been, but it gives you the snapshot of all that God has for you to be.
Beautiful. This has been the best day.
Oh my gosh. Time flew by and we can talk to you forever.
I know. We need two hours at least.
I know. But we have to tell the people about a film. Ooh.
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 I'm sorry. We got Kirk Franklin's A Gospel Christmas. It's got Demetria McKinney. It's on like an SNL skit, right? Yeah. Demetria McKinney.
It's got Chas Lamar Shepherd. It's got Angela Burchett and Kendra S. Johnson and Grammy winner Regina Bell.
Yes.
That was the perfect intro to this film. I can't even, I there's no reason for me to do it because you, that's
it's like, just watch, y'all. Just watch.
Just watch, y'all. Yeah, yeah. On Lifetime.
Lifetime, you just got your new jingle.
Yes. That is the jingle.
I hope you're very pleased. More of that. More of that. Tables Art is produced by us, Kirby Dixon and Amira Lawali. This episode was also produced by McKamey Lynn and Aisha Jordan and edited by Melissa Kaplan. Our researcher is Emma Fredericks. Our executive producers are Jesse Katz and Ted Butler. The Tables Hours was created by Lifetime. Subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. See you next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.